Boker Tov, we're continuing Parashat Mishpatim, and yesterday we finished off with the Umake Aviv Ve'imo Motyumat, the person who strikes his father or mother must die. Halachically, again, that's only if they create a bruise. Next one is 16, Pasuk 16. Begonev Ishum Charov Nimsa V'yado Motyumat. Person kidnaps a person and steals him, and he's found in his hand, meaning there's proof of it, the person must die. So what is the Torah saying here? That slave trade is forbidden. We are the first people
to...
kidnap
him, they put him as for slave.
Yeah, the reason a person kidnaps someone is to put them up for sale.
Yes.
Right, so...
Yeah, it's selling, you're right.
Here, I'll read it for you down here. Kidnapping for the purpose of selling the victim into slavery in a foreign land. Yeah, for example, the story of Yosef. It therefore meant both the loss of liberty and spiritual death to the victim, if an Israelite. It was only towards the end of the 18th century that slave trade, organized kidnapping on a vast scale with the hideous cruelties attendant to it, came to be recognized in the Western European countries as something unspeakably vile. So the Torah made Asur the slave trade 3,000 years ago.
And then they made it
200 years ago.
200 years ago, exactly.
Okay. Next. Person curses his father and his mother, he must be put to death. Now, let's say two people are fighting, and a person strikes his friend with a rock or with a fist, and he does not die, but he falls ill. If he gets up and he walks again on his staff,
no problem.
Then the person is free of sin, meaning he's clean.
Yes.
Only he must pay for the time he spent in the hospital, meaning this guy has to go to work, right?
Yes.
So if he's in the hospital instead of going to work, in economics they call
this 3 days, right, or 5 days, or 1 week.
In business world they call this opportunity cost, right? You have to pay for the guy's opportunity cost. Because now he was not available to work for a couple of days.
Even if he was at home, doesn't matter. As far as both.
The Gemara talks about what kind of work they assume the person is doing. You have to pay him as if he was I think the Gemara says is Shomer Kishuin. I read it in Rashi this week. Person who is guarding some kind of fruit, who's sitting is watching some kind of fruit. There's a specific job that they would use as the media, as like the base pay that the guy earns.
Yeah.
And also, he also has to help heal him, meaning he has to pay for his doctor bills and he has to pay for the time he is wasting. Okay, good. Now, let's say a person strikes his servant or his maidservant with a staff or with anything, right? He strikes him and the person dies. Nakom in nakem, the person must be venged, meaning he gets put to death for what he did.
You cannot just kill your...
You can't just kill your servant, which is also typical in those days, to just kill a servant. But if the person was walking already for 2 days, and let's say a person... He gets up and he starts walking and he's fine again.
Survives.
And then all of a sudden he dies 5 days later. Then there's no punishment to the master. Because, what's the reason? People always think this is a bad thing, right? It works as follows. The system is as follows. We just said that if I strike a random person, I have to pay for his doctor bills and his opportunity cost.
Correct.
Now let's say that person isn't random. Let's say that person is my slave, which is this case. Then if he's my slave, then already his time and his doctor visits are already my obligation.
It's mine already.
So if I strike him and he doesn't die from my strike, the only way you can hold me liable for the person who's already my slave is if he dies. Because then I'm obligated and I have to be put to get, then the person who killed him has to be put to death. But for the loss of his time and for his doctor visits, I already own the guy.
So yeah, there's nothing else.
So that's what Pasuk 21 is saying. He does not get avenged, ki chaspohu, because he already belongs to him. He's already his property. 22. V'chi natsu anashim v'nagefu isha hara v'yatsu'u yiladea v'lo yihye ason. If two men are fighting together, okay, and they strike in the course of their fighting, they hurt a woman with a child, so that she loses the child, yeah. But there will be no death to the woman, meaning the woman survives and the child dies. He must be paid as, I always have trouble translating. He must be paid according to the woman's husband, and it must be done through the judge's system. I actually want to read the commentaries on this. Yes. But basically, two men are fighting. The woman gets struck. And then the husband of the woman is allowed to tell the guy who struck her
how much you have to give.
How much you have to give. So what does that even mean? Because it's
because that child is very precious at the end of the day.
I understand, but let's see what the real commentary is, because we're missing something. Either she was near the men who were fighting, or she had endeavored to separate them. If the husband makes an exorbitant claim, the sum to be paid is to be fixed. Ah, okay, so that's the idea. So the husband gets to make a claim. According to, I wonder what Rashi says. I'll look into Rashi in a minute. But the husband makes the claim against the person who struck her. Now, the good thing about it is that because it's in front of a court,
It's a capital crime.
Well, not maybe, but the point is, because it's in front of a court, if the husband makes an exorbitant claim, like we won $30 million, then the court system says, excuse me.
Take it easy.
Yeah, exactly. There are also a lot of implications for this part as to the status of a baby in the womb. There are a lot of people...
Which stage is the baby?
Yeah, because they say... From here we see proof that the Torah does not consider the baby in the womb to be a full human. And more like the progressive argument that it's just a piece of the woman's body. And there is a thing, there's a lot of Torah to that. I once studied it a little bit in depth in Rabbi Chaim Shiur. The status of the woman, of the baby in the woman's womb. And I don't remember the whole thing so deeply, but basically... The argument is, even in Jewish law, for a certain amount of time, she's considered an organ of the woman. Now, in any event, killing the baby or cutting it would be a sin, because a person is not allowed to harm themselves. They're not allowed to put a scar upon their body.
Correct.
So if the baby is considered an organ of the woman's body, then it's nevertheless forbidden to kill the baby.
Correct.
But the fact that it's not considered murder... Like in the Catholic worldview, where Catholics think it's murder, for the Jews, because it's not considered murder, then there will be leniencies in specific cases of extreme distress for the woman. Also, I don't know, it's also an argument of how early and how late, of course. Later on, I don't think anybody with a moral sensibility...
Two months to 8 months, big difference.
Right, exactly. Once that's the form of the baby, even if you see the first trimester, you could see...
Yes.
By the end of the first trimester, you see form.
Yes, for
it's,
sure.
It's very hard to look at that and then chas v'shalom and do whatever it is. But so that's that. Let me see what Rashi says on this piece.
This assessment is very good.
I just want to see how the... Here. Shall cause to be assessed. Causing the death of a fetus is not a capital offense, but the person responsible must pay damages. These damages are assessed by the court in response to a claim made by the father, as we said. Such monetary damages are computed in the following manner. The court evaluates the woman as if she were a slave with market value. She would be worth more when she is pregnant, because the prospective buyer would receive not only her service, but the newborn. The reduction of the value as a result of the accident is the damage that the court requires the assailant to pay. Such a method can be employed regardless of whether or not slavery is practiced. A person's market value consists of the assessment of his life expectancy, health, talent. Insurance companies do this all the time.
Yes.
That's what actuaries do.
Yes, yes. You know? If you're 30 years old, you're 40 years old.
Actuaries, they just decide, what is this person worth? You know, I think it's called quali. I think you look up.
I don't want to know.
You look up the word quali.
I don't want to know how much it is.
Okay, I just don't know where the... If there's... So Rashi is saying that there's a strict calculation. You calculate
yes.
How much value did this woman lose in the slave market as a result of losing her child? Because when she had her child, she was worth more because there's two instead of it's a package deal.
Yes.
But what I don't understand about Rashi is that where does the husband
make an evaluation?
Right. Where is the husband making any evaluation? I don't see that. Okay.
Because at the end, it's the court who's making an evaluation.
But unfortunately for us, we're still not even done with. Oh, we did Rishon. So we still have so much to do, so we have to move on. What pasuk are we on?
23.
Now, if a person were to die, now not the baby, because the baby is not considered a person technically, but if the mother dies, then it must be traded life for life. Ayin tachat ayin, shin tachat shin, yad tachat yad, regel tachat ragel, eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, hand for a hand, foot for a foot, kiviya tachat kiviya, a bruise instead of a bruise, petza tachat patza, as another word for a kiviya is like a burn. A burn for a burn, petza tachat patza is a bruise for a bruise, chabura tachat chabura.
It's a wound.
A wound for a wound. Let's read some of the commentary here also. I really enjoyed this Hertz commentary that I'm using for Mishpatim. He says, no, he helps a lot. So all it points out is that whenever we say here life for life, tooth for tooth, we're talking about monetary compensation. We don't cut off a person's arm.
Somebody cut his arm. Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
There is I have to bring you tomorrow. I have to go find it.
There must be a price for everything, right? There must be a value, certain.
I think the way they do it is they see how much value the person lost in the market, in the slave market, by having this
move. Based by the slave market.
No, because it's the best way to value something. You know, how do you know how much Bitcoin is worth? What is Bitcoin? It's a
right.
So there's a marketplace for it, and you know what it's worth because there's a market. There's people who want to buy it.
It's
the best way to get to
not
a good.
Slave. I think somebody who's not a slave is worth more than somebody who's a slave. No. Probably.
I mean, both a slave and a non-slave have a value if they were to be traded on the slave market. I think that's the idea.
Okay.
All right. Next.
Yes.
V'chi yake ish et ayin avdo o et ein amato v'shichata lachofshi yishal lachinu tachat ayino v'im shen avdo o shen amato yapi lachofshi yishal lachinu tachat shino. This is a good law which we mentioned before.
Yes.
Right? If a man were to smite the eye of his servant, or the eye of his maidservant, and he destroys it, meaning he causes a loss of limb, and it's not only eye, this is loss of any limb. Lachofshi shalachenu tachat aino. He must send them for free on because of his eye. And this is a way of protecting the slaves. Because the slaves were very, very typically beaten ruthlessly.
Like a normal thing.
Yeah, it was a normal thing to beat them ruthlessly. So here, they are being protected so that if the master is savage enough that they lose a limb, they automatically go free. That's most basic protection.
I don't believe that the Jews would hit their slaves.
Oh, you don't believe in that sense. You don't believe that they would hit. Hit their slave in the first place.
Wow, but probably it was common practice in all over the.
Yeah, exactly. I think the Torah is more talking to the Jewish people
because of what they had experienced in light of
the goyim that surround them, and not as was inherent to their. What's typical
don't be
of
like
the Jewish
them.
People.
Don't
right,
be like,
right.
Do not do what they did.
Right, exactly. Exactly. All of these laws are screaming at you. Do not do what the goyim do.
Yes.
Behave better.
Yes.
Okay. And if he loses, he causes loss of tooth, he should send them free even instead of his tooth. Now that's a good one because on the first pasuk, it says if he lost an eye,
more difficult.
A tooth is something. It's barely a loss. You know, most people lose their teeth anyways.
Yes.
So even if a person loses what he will have lost already, not only limbs that a person keeps for his whole life, but a tooth, then. Let me read the commentary here. Bondman, the loss of any limb from the most essential down to the least indispensable gave the slave immediate freedom if that loss was due to the brutal treatment of the master. According to rabbinic interpretation, this applies only to... Actually, I forgot to mention this. It applies only to Eved Kena'ani. If the slave was a Hebrew, he was treated entirely like the free Hebrew citizen and received the same indemnification and could not ipso facto claim his release. Meaning, if he's a Hebrew, then he's a Jewish person, then he claims his money in court. I think that's what he's trying to say. But if it's a goy, then he goes free.
Also, a Hebrew just goes and gets money.
I think so. Oh, yeah, wow. Let me also see Rashid.
But it's free? Is it free? Is it free?
No, not necessarily. Oh. That's the difference.
I don't think there's any interpretation about this.
Yeah, I don't think Rashid talks about it. Yeah. But I saw this also by the maidservant at Ibn Abdul. Here, בקנעניה, אבל עברי אינו יוצא בשן ועין. כמו שאמרנו, אצל לא תצא כצאת העבדים. He said the same thing about the maid servant earlier on. I didn't show it to you because it was very complicated.
Because the maid servant, actually, they have to get married with her. So she becomes a wife in a certain way. It's not really...
Right, but what about... So, again, the Hebrew slave does not just go for... apparently, it's even... Meaning this is to protect the heathen slave. And it makes sense, because where do you think these heathen slaves came from, the non-Jewish slaves came from? They capture them in war. Yeah, and those are people that they would abuse the most. People would typically abuse the most. So, for a Jewish slave, you treat him like a Jew. You think you're better than him because he works for you in your house? No, he's just a servant. It's like a
commandment. It's like a person giving the law that treat that.
It's like
Jewish.
A person works for you for salary, and then you do something against
actually,
him.
Actually, you have to have much more respect for. You have to be very careful.
Right, I'm saying if a person is a salaried employee of yours, do you like if you hurt him, you have to decide. Yeah, you have to pay him. Correct. That's it. Correct. Now, if he's a servant, a non-Jewish servant, the protection is different because we're dealing with a case in which. People tend to be brutal towards those servants. I don't think Jews were typically brutal towards a Jewish servant who works in the household.
Why?
Okay, but for a non-Jew, they have that basic protection. Okay, tomorrow, what laws are we doing tomorrow?
Oh, just the beginning.
Yeah, we're gonna get the ox.
Yeah, the animals. Your animal. Yeah.
The goring of animals and the damage it causes to other people's property and how you pay for that. All right, Baruch Adonai Lalam.
Amen. Amen. Amen.